Gemily James here. Recently, I caught up with illusionist Derren Brown after his hugely successful Broadway debut. He is back in the UK for his biggest tour in 20 years. Now, the content of the show remains a closely guarded secret, but if you've ever seen him before, you know that you're in for a real treat. So I caught up with him to find out a little bit more about the show and also chat to him if we create our own luck and what happens when things, well, don't quite always go to plan.
BFBS.
The Forces Station.
Thank you so much for taking time out to join us on BFBS Radio. Brand new show. It's been delayed for a couple of years. Tell us, what can we expect?
I swear the audience is secrecy every night, so I'm going to be a bit elusive in my answer. It's quite a personal show. It's more emotive and probably more fun than people might expect, particularly if they've only seen me on TV. It's a lot of audience participation. I would hate to be dragged up on stage, so I throw frisbees out, which means, you know, if like me, you would not want to come up on stage, you can just hand it to the person next to you. And I only say that because I know people that don't come because they think they're going to be forced to get involved. It's not like that at all. It's a big show with a big heart. I'm loving this one so very much.
And what's it like being back in front of a live audience?
It took a while to get used to it. I had a couple of months with this last year and a couple of months now this year, but at first it never felt like you'd be back in a room with a crowd of people and just all the ordinary stuff of backstage and working with the team again. That felt just like a million miles away. And then of course the audiences that were coming, and to an extent still are, it might be their first show that they've of any sort they've been to for a long time. So all of that was really making it feel, you know, extra kind of special. And the nature of the show as well, like, it's hard. It was written before first lockdown happened, and it was due to go out on the road the very first day of the first lockdown in England. The show was written originally with the idea that the things in life that are most difficult and isolating, when we feel most isolated, tend to be the things that actually connect us, actually join us up. The weight of what it is to be human sometimes when just life goes badly. Lockdown happened, which was a literal play out of exactly that idea, right? We're all isolated and the things that isolate us are actually joining us up. We had a couple of years to then go back and sort of think about that more. And we could all, the three of us that write the show, could work on it and tease those things out. And now it's a show that actually, I think, sits very well in this moment. It's not a show about lockdown or COVID or anything, but a lot of things like that have kind of come together. And now it's had this amazing response to it, more than previous shows I've had, which is lovely because it's also a very personal show. So that's a nice thing to happen.
I'm reading lots of positive things about the show, really looking forward to seeing it. People are saying that it's your best one yet. Go back to what you just said about being very personal. It reminds me of Apocalypse, you know, the show you did on TV where you managed to change that guy's life. I mean, how does that make you feel when you change someone's life like that?
The experience of doing the shows is amazing. Those things, it's a very emotional thing that we all go through. I mean, we're watching and you're watching like one guy's emotional experience, but all of us in the gallery, in the truck, you know, watching it happen in real time. And we've all put like a year of our lives into these things too. So it's actually a very shared emotional thing. That side of it is extraordinary. And there's nothing I can think of that really compares to it. But of course, at the same time, and I've always keep in touch with them and I've always remained friends with these people. So Stephen, who went through that, is a good pal. He is leading a great life now, but then I don't want to be taking credit for that either. So you can only kind of really do what you can in the moment and hope it acts as a sort of a springboard and a pushing him out with a better vision ahead of him, which I think it did. But beyond that, he must take full credit. We just got married not too long ago, got a gorgeous little daughter, and he's very happy and doing well.
It's nice to see that you still keep in touch with them and sort of follow their journey. Another one that I loved was the lucky dog that you did.
In Todmorden, yes.
I mean, do you think that we create our own luck? Can we change fate? Can we change our path in life?
So a friend of mine, Richard Wiseman, who's done a lot of research into luck, told me about, I met him one day and he'd just come from doing this experiment. So he was talking to people online or they'd filled out a questionnaire and then he was going to meet them and talk to them about luck. And one of the things was they ticked whether they consider themselves a lucky person or an unlucky person. The whole point of the experiment actually wasn't really to talk to them, but he left a £20 note on the pavement outside the cafe. And he was interested to know whether there'd be any correlation between the people that considered themselves lucky and the people that actually found the note and picked it up, or those that just, you know, kind of missed it and walked over it. Every single person that considered themselves lucky found the £20 note and picked it up. Every single person that ticked the box saying they thought they were unlucky missed it. You know, he was really thought it was extraordinary. And this is what led to the Todmorden show, The Lucky Dog, was that it's just about taking opportunities, that people that are luckier, it's not something you've got in your blood or like something you're born with. You take more opportunities in life. You just sort of naturally say yes to more things. So you're just making more connections and you're making more things happen. So along the way, those things will fall into place. Whereas if you tend to walk through life saying no and avoiding opportunities, which, you know, of course we all do, we're all somewhere on that scale, then you can fool yourself into thinking you're kind of congenitally unlucky. And it's not, it's just sort of those behaviors that you're choosing from moment to moment. It's really, really interesting stuff.
Really interesting. Of course, lockdown, you were still busy. You wrote a couple of books. One of them was the follow-up to your book, Happier, A Little Bit Happier, which you tell us about how to control anxiety, which of course over the last couple of years, you know, a lot of us have been quite anxious. Give us a few tips on how we can control anxiety.
It wasn't so much about controlling anxiety. I've written this book Happy, which is about stoicism, and the Stoics have a great and I think very useful idea that you only control the things in life that you're in control of. Don't try and control the things you're not in control of, because you're going to drive yourself mad. You're going to get frustrated and anxious. And you're only in control of your thoughts and your actions. Like, that's hard enough, but that is all you're in control of. All the rest of it, what other people think of you and how things turn out in the world, you know, outcomes, results, those normally are not under your control. So you can decide those things are fine as they are. Nothing bad happens, and just get on with the stuff you're actually in control of. And it's actually a very helpful idea, but there are some edges to it, and it doesn't have a lot to say about kindness. And yes, sometimes I think the value of anxiety, because that's all about avoiding anxiety. So I think there is something to be said for it. Namely, well, first of all, that anxiety is a signal that something is wrong, and there's only so much avoiding it that you want to do if actually it's important to listen to it. And the danger is that you can also start to sort of demonize it and see it as something that must be a terrible thing, like you've done something wrong if you're feeling anxious. And that will only increase your anxiety, of course. You know, you don't leave your job and get a better job unless your current job is making you anxious, right? You don't change your relationship unless your current relationship is making you anxious. You don't cross the road on your own when you're a kid without letting go of your mother's hand at some point, right? So you have to experience that in order to grow. So that is a big part of the book. It's essentially about, and I think in both the Happy book, which is about Stoicism, and this book, A Book of Secrets, is how we live with a world that's difficult. What we've been told for a long time is set your goals, believe in yourself, and the world should do what you want to do. The universe should, you know, give you what you want and answer your prayers and so on. Of course, it's just not true. And the danger with it is that when things go badly, suddenly it must be our own fault. We did something wrong, which just makes it worse. I've never been a fan of that American optimism model. And I think a more helpful model is life is difficult. It doesn't go how we want it to all the time. So how do you make your peace with that and move in a kind of easier accordance with the world and with your own anxiety, as well as what's going on outside of you, to just live more comfortably? And there are no easy answers to it, of course, but I think it's a really interesting and much more valuable question to engage with. It's also a big part of Showman as well. That is, at its heart, it's, you know, life is difficult, but actually these things that are difficult, kind of, they're okay. Like, they are part of the picture, and they're the things that connect us, even though they tend to be the very things that make us feel isolated.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. Well, coming back to Showman, the new tour, it's the longest tour that you've done. It's been a couple of years since we've seen you. About, is it 5 years since you've been in the UK? Then?
It's been a little while, because I was on, well, obviously there was the pandemic, but then I was doing Broadway before that, and that was a couple of years. And then the 2 years before that, I was doing a show called Underground, which was actually made up of old material, because it was essentially a show that I was going to take to Broadway. That was going to be the show. So this is the first brand new show, yeah. And it's a lovely thing, this show. And I'm really pleased the response to it has been amazing. You know, I'm really being treated at the moment. You know, I'm in Dublin at the moment, incredible audiences. Here, I've got Belfast coming up, which is always extraordinary. Edinburgh, Aberdeen, these are phenomenal cities. And this is a long tour, it's an 8-month stretch. And taking something that is so personal to such incredibly good audiences.
I always come away from your shows completely mind-boggled. I'm a Googler. I want to know how it works. And I know a lot of planning must go into these shows. Do you ever worry, is it going to go wrong? Because something went wrong a few years ago in Belfast.
Yes. There was a there was a thing at the start of the show where I'd have a box of money and it was covered up. Either contains £500 or 5,000, and someone in the audience is trying to guess. And if they guess the right one, if they're correct, they can have it. And I give them the whole show to kind of, you know, change the mind. And it was at the waterfront in Belfast. It's quite a big open concert hall. It was my first night there, and something in the acoustics of the building and the shock of the accent, perhaps, on the first night. I just misheard this guy and I ended up losing £5,000. It was an awkward thing because I couldn't just give him the cash because we couldn't get £5,000 out for the next day. So we were struggling to work out how to give him this money.
Could you not go to the casino? Or are you banned from the casino?
I am also banned from casinos. So yeah, I couldn't even do that. I mean, it was great for the audience. So it was great for that guy. Slightly confusing for the audience. I think I guess they must have thought I'd just do that every night, which I really don't. So yeah, that is a lasting memory of Belfast many years ago. But yeah, again, incredible crowds. I think these sorts of cities where you have a strong sense of community just makes for the most astonishing experience. And if you happen to combine that with great theatres like the Gaiety in Dublin and, of course, the Royal Opera House, particularly, again, we are His Majesty's in Aberdeen, again, beautiful theatre. The Playhouse in Edinburgh is extraordinary. These are amazing theatres with, like, great acoustics, so you can, which is good for me, yeah, for that reason. But you can hear everybody, and it becomes this very communal experience. It's hard to describe, but it's a real thing that we all kind of share in together.
And I've heard that you're asking people that are coming along to the show to bring something meaningful or personal to. Does that mean that everybody's going to get the chance to get involved if they want to?
Yes, thank you for reminding me. I'm supposed to say this, always forget, so thank you. Yeah, I'm asking people to bring an object with sentimental value, but something that you could hold in your hands, like you could cup in your hands and hold on your lap. So if there is something, if there isn't, don't worry, but if there is something you could bring, then do. So yeah, it all makes sense in the show. I swear the audience to secrecy every night, so yeah, I can't say too much, but if there is something like that you could bring, then yes.
It makes it difficult to promote your show when you can't talk about it because you want it to be that surprise.
All the reviews are sort of saying, I can't tell you what happens. Sort of got used to it. And there's a nice feeling again of like, we're all sharing in this thing that isn't going to leave this room.
I think that adds to the whole show, that you go away and you want to tell people. A little bit like the latest James Bond film. I don't know if you've seen it, but I went with the girls to see it. And then when I came home, I had to take my other half because I said, I can't tell you what happens. I have to take you along and then we can talk about it.
It's amazing actually that people do. I mean, I'm sure if you dig really deep, you can find out somewhere online what happens in the shows, but generally I've never seen anybody giving it away. People do respect it and it's lovely. It's encouraging as well, because I presume it reflects people's experience in the room, that they don't want to sort of spoil it for others. So that's very nice. It's a very touching thing that people are happy to join in with that. And like, I've done this for 20 years and every year people have done that, kept the show a secret. Maybe it's just part of the fun of it, but it does mean a lot.
I think you must be influencing them to keep it a secret. Is that it?
I just ask nicely. Sometimes that's all it needs.
Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing Showmen. You're in Belfast and then in Londonderry. You're then hopping over to Edinburgh. And then in my hometown, Aberdeen, they're a difficult audience, that miserable bunch.
No, they're not. They're great. Aberdeen's lovely. It's a lovely crowd.
Well, Darren, thank you so much for joining us on BFBS, of course, the station.
Thank you so, so much for having me. Lovely to talk to you. Thank you.